It's time for the Las Vegas Sports Line, brought to you by the Sunset Station with sports director Chuck Esposito.
And good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the holiday Veterans Day edition of the Las Vegas Sports Line. It's a day off for a lot of people. It is not a day off for us because the books are open. A lot of business is going to get done for sure, and we got a lot to talk about. Scott Spreitzer, part of the great team at Doc Sports, is here. I'm Dave Koken, and on the phone with us, as he is every Monday, it's Chuck Esposito from Sunset Station, Station Casinos, always over at Red Rock today. Hi, Chuck. How are you?
I'm doing good, guys. How are you today?
Very good, and loads to talk about. Ari, let's kick off our Monday afternoon quarterback.
That 41, green, 42. What?
The weekend's football has come and gone. It's time for Monday afternoon quarterback with the Sunset Stations.
Chuck Esposito.
Okay, that's not the right one, but that's all right. We usually have one with some highlights on it instead of somebody yelling 342 or whatever, but so scrap that one. Anyway.
Omaha. It's starting to audible.
Really. that one I don't like. Anyway, let's begin. Before we get to the NFL, guys, let's talk about Saturday and the two big winners, LSU and Minnesota. Chuck, LSU was, they looked like the best team in the country on Saturday.
They did. I thought they looked really good. I'd say Ohio State's awfully good, too, guys.
Yep.
You know, you're going up against a not 100% Tua, and I think was a big part of it. But they did. They looked really good on both sides of the ball. And I can see you making that case, Dave, that they're the best team in the country. But I think in a neutral field right now, the Buckeyes would be the favorite.
I actually would have Ohio State about a one-point favorite over LSU.
Ohio State's my highest-rated power,
but
only by a point. I got to ask you, Chuck, if these two teams are to play again, LSU and Alabama, it's on a neutral field, and Tua is 100% healthy going in. What do you make that number?
If he's 100% on a neutral field, I'm going to make Alabama a very small favorite, guys, somewhere maybe around 3-ish.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, maybe just over a field goal. I'm watching the game, Chuck, and I don't know if you agree with this or not, but I thought the first quarter and a half we saw what a soft schedule did to the Crimson Tide because it did look, and I know Tua was hurt, but on the other side of the football, it looked like they just weren't ready for about a quarter and a half for the speed of the game that a team like LSU brings. Once they got settled, and I know they gave up 46 points, all of a sudden it was a pretty even game. They had that rough couple of mistakes in the first half. But again, I thought it took them a lot of time, and it ended up costing them to be able to get used to elite-level football.
Yeah, I think you looking at the – I don't disagree with that, Scott. I think looking at the last quarter and a half, I thought was pretty even at that point. So, again, it's just tough without 100% Tua to really get a good gauge for that game. But I still, as I said, I would make them a small favorite if they play again on a neutral field.
Well, Minnesota was 100%. They were absolutely terrific against Penn State. I thought they outplayed the Nittany Lions and deserved to win the football game. I didn't think there was a fluke of any kind. And Minnesota is in this thing now. I mean, they've got a really tough assignment coming up this week that we'll talk about later in the show. But that was a great performance by the Golden Gophers on Saturday.
It was. And, you know, the bettors backed both Minnesota and LSU. Thought there was some value there with both dogs. I was impressed with Minnesota. That was actually a really fun game to watch, too, in the morning, guys. Just the way they went up and down the field and the points and kept thinking, you know, Penn State's going to come back. They're going to come back. And the end of the game was just terrific, the way it all played out. But I think you look at the teams on the outside now, the outside of the top four, and – you know, Minnesota's in that mix, but you look at Oregon and who they have left, and, I mean, that loss against Auburn, God, early on really sticks out now. And you look at Georgia, who, you know, plays Florida this week, and or plays Auburn this week, excuse me, and if they win out, you know, they're going to get a chance, too, to make some noise. So I think it's interesting right now with the top six, and I would put Minnesota after that, for me, at least, as we chat today.
I was watching Penn State all season long, obviously, as we all do, and I was doing a couple of videos last week and thought Minnesota was the play there. I know that's easy to say now that the game is final, but I kept thinking and I kept saying that I thought Penn State's lack of offense was going to catch up to them. They had gained less than 300 yards in a couple of games recently. They got outgained by about 130 yards by Michigan, outgained 356 to 294 by the Hawkeyes, and then 307, and they couldn't run against Michigan State. I just thought it was a situation where the quarterback play isn't quite at an elite level for Penn State. And then I look at their wins, and I saw wins over Idaho, Buffalo, Maryland, Purdue, barely escaped Pitt, which isn't bad, and then, of course, Michigan State. Six of the 8 wins were kind of against really nobody to talk about. And P.J. Fleck is doing a tremendous job. We're going to talk about their game against Iowa a little bit later in the show, but they've got Iowa, they've got at Northwestern, they've got Wisconsin. I just got a good feeling, guys, that Minnesota is not going to get through these final 3 games unscathed. I think it's going to be tough, and we'll talk about that Iowa game a little bit later.
Let's talk about the Golden Knights before we get to the NFL. They're not playing very good hockey right now. The backup goalie situation is a problem, and the turnovers, Chuck. I mean, the neutral and defensive zone turnovers are alarming right now.
I think that the fact that they've, you know, found ways to lose games at home in overtime or a shootout that they've won, that they were winning for the bulk of the game, the first time that they've lost, you know, back-to-back games in regulation now.
Yeah.
This season they sent Glass down and a few other guys today. It might just be a salary cap move right now, but they're not playing great hockey. I think the one luxury they have, or the two they have, is one, they play in the West. And it's a lot easier to hit a few speed bumps in the West and kind of weather the storm until the calendar changes than it is in the East. Because if you have a bad week or 10-day stretch in the East, you're going to find yourself on the outside looking in. And Wednesday night, they're back home. They play a Blackhawk team that's maybe playing a little bit better right now. Could have easily beat Pitt on Saturday, beat Toronto yesterday in a high-scoring game. But the Knights own the Hawks. They've never lost to them since their inception into the league. So it's kind of the right team for them to get well against. But, yeah, definitely some concern about the way they've played early on this season, especially in our own end.
I don't want to put it all on him, Dave, but Malcolm Subban, he forces them to play a conservative brand of hockey.
You got to stop that third goal.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I'm sorry. You got that to me, was a soft goal, and you got to stop that goal.
I had just got done texting you at the time. I think it was 2-1 Vegas, and I said they're going to have to score at least one more goal because you know he's going to give up a cheapie. It's just what happens. And what does he do? He gives up a cheapie. But the bottom line is that, again, I don't want to put it all on him, but they play a conservative brand of hockey when he's on the ice and net, and that's not kind of what they're built for. But, Chuck, man, I'm watching this team, and I go to a lot of games, I don't know, maybe a dozen a year, and I also watch just about every game on TV when I'm not at the games, and Cody Eakin's not producing as much. I know he was banged up a little bit earlier in the season. Brandon Peary is a scorer who's not scoring. He's not even coming close on
Brandon
some of these.
Brandon Peary at this point, I hate to say it,
filling
but
a spot.
He could be in Chicago right now.
Yeah, he's filling a spot. And he was actually playing better last year for this team than he is this year. They don't have a healthy Alex Tuck, which he's been healthy for 2 periods this year. And then I look at guys missing like Belmar. I mean, that's heart and soul type of stuff there.
Big loss.
So I look at this team and the way they're playing, and I see some kind of spark missing. It's almost like somebody's got to be that, you know, ignition or the igniter or whatever you want to call them. And you would think that Nate Schmidt coming back could have done that, but I think he needs a partner out there on the ice who has that kind of extra spark. But again, something has to be done when Fleury's got to sit and rest because they all of a sudden go very conservative when Subban's on the ice.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. I think the spark is a little bit missing. And, you know, you look at Marchessault and Carlson, where they're at with their goals this year. I think it's more somebody, guys, that they still don't have a captain. That it is that guy who's the leader when they're in the locker room.
Yep.
So it's not just on the ice, but off the ice as well. You have a lot of high-end guys there with Stone and Pacioretty and Carlson and Marchessault, guys that have the big deals right now. But they need somebody to be maybe that guy to tie it all together. And I think off the ice, it's important that person kind of steps up and helps this team out a little bit because I think they do lack a little bit of identity.
Well, we'll see what happens as they get back home and hopefully things will straighten out. On to the NFL, and we start off with a great game between the Chiefs and Titans. And the Titans have themselves a quarterback. Holy Tannehill.
Yeah.
This guy's playing really well, and that was a phenomenal drive that he led them on to win the game yesterday. Big win for the Titans as far as keeping their playoff hopes alive. And the Chiefs, and suddenly they've got some competition in their division.
Yeah, it was a huge win for our side of the counter, too, guys, especially having the Titans win outright. Tannehill's 3-1 right now. They can run the ball with Henry. I really like the way defensively that they played. You know, I read some things afterward that said they really watched how some of the teams in their division in the AFC South have played the Chiefs before and had some success. if it was the Texans or the Jags last year. And, you know, I thought they played really well. They put a lot of pressure on Mahomes. He had some good throws, and they had some big plays. Still, the Chiefs' inability to really run the ball successfully and to be able to stop the run was a little worrisome. I really second-guessed. I know it's easy to play Monday morning quarterback. That Vrabel decided to go for it on that 4th-and-17 from the 32. Mm-hmm. I thought with three timeouts, go ahead and punt that ball and then try to get the ball back. But it all worked out. And again, it was a really good game for our side, especially having them get beat outright, both for teasers and money line.
We talked before the season about Ford and Houston on that Kansas City defensive line no longer being a part of the team. They already were a middle-of-the-pack defense at best with those guys, with two stars, and obviously they're not even close to middle-of-the-pack right now. They gave up almost 9 yards per carry yesterday, 225 yards rushing.
Oh,
so
Derek
then Tannehill can
him.
Oh, exactly. And then Tannehill can game manage. He doesn't have to win the game with his arm. I watch this team when I watch Kansas City now, Chuck, and you hit it on the head. I mean, they really miss what Kareem Hunt was doing for this team before last year's suspension, and of course now he's with Cleveland. But I watch what's going on the field, and I know you got to make, you know, Mahomes when he's out those couple of weeks, 7-8 points difference with Matt Moore on the field. But what's happening actually on the field, he's not even close to being 7 points or 8 points worth that much over Moore, because the defense is so bad and they can't run the football.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a difference now. They're putting so much pressure on Mahomes that it makes it really tough that when they're not able to score those points, sustain drives. But even against the Texans this year, we talked about it, how they ran right through them. You had Carlos Hyde and Duke Johnson picking up 6, 7, 8 yards a shot. I'm surprised they weren't more active at the trade deadline. But and you guys are right. I mean, they're in a hunt right now, because you look at the Raiders, who, I mean, at 5-4, and you look at the schedule they have coming up. I mean, playing the Bengals and Jets back-to-back. They already have wins against the Colts and Chargers, who are in that wild card hunt with them as well. All of a sudden, now this Raider team has a lot to play for, because they're right in it.
The Cleveland Browns won a game. They beat the Bills 19-16 in a less than sensational football game in Cleveland. I'll go ahead and ask the question and then answer it myself. Was this a buy sign on the Browns? No. Chuck, they're a bad football team.
No, I agree with you. It wasn't. I think, though, you know, I said it last week, and I'm still a little bit of a non-believer with the Bills. They beat the teams that they had to beat, and okay, that's fine. But they trailed at home in the fourth quarter to both Cincinnati and Miami. They got beat at home by New England and Philadelphia, the two good teams they played. And then I think it spoke volumes for what we think of the Bills and what maybe the bettors think of the Bills, because they were playing a 2-6 team on the road who had never won a home game yet this year, yet they still were a 2.5 or 3-point dog. So I'm a little concerned with the Bills right now. Can they muster enough offense to be competitive at the next level? They still sit really good at 6-3 in the wild card hunt, but a lot of teams are closing the gap right now. I'm just not sure they do enough offensively to compete with some of those teams that can score. Defensively, they're very good, but I think that loss yesterday kind of spoke volumes to me of where exactly Buffalo is at this point.
Yeah, this was one of those rare instances this season when I jumped on Cleveland, and this is a good gauge on whether people should be betting, because if you liked Cleveland, you should have shot for 2.5. Yep. If you like Buffalo, this should have never been anything but a push for you. But that game-winning touchdown drive by Baker and the Browns offense was excellent. The Bills defense had been stout, but look at their last few games. I mean, they're getting gashed on the ground. They've given up over 100 yards rushing the last five games. Here's why Cleveland might be a little bit of a buy. And it's one player, and I just spoke about him playing for Kansas City and doing so well for them in the past. That's Kareem Hunt. Guys, take a look at this game if you go, you know, online, and you can kind of see what they were doing with him. I think he only ran the ball 4 or 5 times. He ran the ball pretty well, but they used him as a blocker for Nick Chubb. And he opened up some initial holes, and they ran for about 150 on almost 6 yards per carry yesterday. And all of a sudden, because they were able to run well, that offensive line started to pass protect, and Baker Mayfield could go through his progression. So kind of pay attention to Kareem Hunt the next couple of weeks, because they used him as a decoy, they used him as a fullback type of blocker, and he's going to also start getting more carries. I think that makes this offense a little bit more dynamic.
Fun game in Tampa. Didn't mean a whole lot, but the Cardinals and Bucks went to the wire, and Tampa Bay pulls out a 30-27 victory. Two more interceptions for Jameis Winston along the way, Chuck.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to move on from him, guys. I know that the Titans made the change already and went to Tannehill from Mariota. I have to think Tampa does the same thing. They did win that game. Arians playing against his old team. But I'm still really impressed with the way Kyler Murray's playing right now and kind of running around out there and getting things done. Had the 3 touchdown passes to Kirk yesterday. I think moving forward, this team's going to get better and better. They need to surround Murray with better players on both sides of the ball. But I think they're trending at least in the right direction. And they're definitely fun to watch, and they're in almost every game. If you look at what they've done against the point spread, they're probably one of the top teams in the league covering the numbers so far.
I tell you what, we all thought the books were going to need Arizona every single week before the season began.
Yeah, not anymore.
Look at Kyler Murray. You brought it up. I mean, this guy's better at quarterback in the NFL than Winston already. He went 212 passes without throwing a pick. I don't think Winston's gone 212 seconds without throwing a pick in his NFL career. I had Tampa Bay yesterday, guys, and he threw a couple of key picks again. They end up winning by 3, but they fell as far as the spread was concerned. And again, listen, Arizona goes 1-for-10 on third down conversions and still was in this game.
The Terrible in New Jersey, and I think this actually, I don't know how high volume the game was, but I suspect this was actually a pretty good result for the books. The Giants lose to the Jets 34-27. Was that correct? Did the books do well with this game, Chuck?
We did, Dave. It was one of the games where you saw both Sharp and the public play on the Giants in this game. I think going in, you had so many question marks with the Jets and would Le'Veon Bell play or not, and you had some other injuries, and the Giants and Jones hadn't looked that bad. I think, you know, that was I still think that was the right side. The Giants turned the ball over a lot, put themselves in a bad spot. Jones, for all the good that he does with the 4 TD passes, he is still a turnover machine right now early in his career. But overall, it was a good game for our side of the counter.
Well, this had to be a good game. The Saints, heavy favorites, almost 2 touchdowns over the Falcons. Atlanta had 7 sacks for the season going into yesterday's game, and they got 6 in one day against one of the best offensive lines in football. Chuck, that was the ultimate no-show by the Saints, and, you know, props to the Falcons. They really played well in a division rivalry game.
They did. You know, just looking at that game, it just looked like a huge number. I know it's easy, again, to play Monday morning quarterback, but it always seems like when those two teams played, whoever has the ball last has a chance to win that game. And I've been saying for weeks, I think at some point, and I thought it would have happened already, that the Saints may have hit that kind of wall a little bit because they played so well with Breeze out, and they raised to the next level while he was out defensively and with Bridgewater in, that they just kind of hit a wall a little bit in that game. But I think Atlanta played great in that game. That kind of speaks volumes now, you know, in the NFC with Green Bay winning and San Francisco playing tonight. You know, ultimately, who are going to be the top two teams in the NFC? Because it's going to be awfully tough if anybody has to go through Lambeau. So that was a big loss yesterday for the Saints.
Thought that was a good spot to go against the Saints. It was kind of a Sharpie play from a couple of guys I know. But listen, here's one of the big deals on the field. I'm not much of a matchup guy in the NFL. I've switched to situational capping for the past several years in the NFL, and it's worked out better for me than just being a matchup guy. But here's one that meant a huge difference, not to the Saints' offensive lulls yesterday, but Marshon Lattimore got hurt yesterday. He hurt his hamstring. And all of a sudden, you've got Eli Apple out there guarding Julio Jones, and the entire secondary was thrown off their game. And there were missed coverage schemes and confusion all afternoon once Lattimore got hurt. So that's a situation to keep an eye on moving forward, because if his hammy is bothering him for a few weeks, the New Orleans defense, especially the secondary, is not quite at the level we've seen him at most of this year.
The Baltimore Ravens destroyed the Bengals 49-13 yesterday, and Lamar Jackson was phenomenal. And Cincinnati now has a 2-game cushion.
They do. I mean, you know, any of these young quarterbacks, if it's Burrow or Tua or Herbert, I mean, be looking at possibly playing for the Bengals. They definitely have the inside track for the first overall pick in the draft. I can't tell you how impressed I am with Lamar Jackson. He seems to get better and better every week. The fact, the way that he can run, Ingram and Edwards can run, they had him and RG3 in the lineup at the same time yesterday, said they're working on some things for the second half of the season and the postseason. They can play some defense. They came off smacking the Patriots in the mouth the week before and still responded well and played good. They're really, really good right now, and I am surprised at how well Lamar Jackson has played, though. But hats off to him. I didn't think he would be this good this soon at that level, but he is becoming a much better pocket passer. Even though he likes to run, all he has to do is be a good quarterback in the pocket, and he's become that very quickly.
He's like Michael Vick, man. He's like Michael Vick when he was doing it for Atlanta at that top level, and he goes 15 for 17 through the air, no picks. So he's definitely playing, I'm shocked, playing better than I thought he would be at this point.
Same,
because
Scott.
Yeah, I thought NFL defenses, you make that adjustment to this guy and you figure out a way to stop him, but he's so darn elusive.
Oh boy.
What I liked best about yesterday, he only ran the ball 7 times. Not 15, not 18, not 20. He took what the defense gave him, and I thought that was a sign of maturity, not only from Lamar Jackson, but by the way the coaching staff is using Lamar Jackson. If you don't need to run him 16 times, don't do it. Don't take a chance of getting him hurt.
No, I agree game. Really quickly, but I think everything you hear and read is that he's a really good kid and that he worked super hard in the offseason. Yep. I mean, he dedicated himself to become a better quarterback in the pocket. And even in the preseason where he didn't run at all, they made him be a pocket passer. I think has really paid off a lot for him.
Yeah, and John Harbaugh is really, really good, by the way. The Panthers and Packers, right to the wire, in the snow at Lambeau. McCaffrey comes up, less than a foot short on what turned out to be the last play of the game. Packers hold on for a 24-16 victory. I thought these were two playoff-caliber teams battling it out yesterday in less than ideal conditions. I don't think they're the two best teams in the league, but I think, Chuck, they're both playoff-level teams.
No, I would agree with that. I've really been impressed, guys, with Kyle Allen. I mean, he, in those conditions, the way he took them down twice, once to get within the touchdown. I know they went for two and didn't get it, and then right at the end of the game, which it almost looked like McCaffrey was in. I mean, it's a shame that they didn't get that intentional grounding or safety on that play, which I still think is a crazy roughing the passer call. It looked like he laid to the side of him when he sacked Rodgers, but Green Bay seems to get fortunate on a lot of those calls, as they did against Detroit. But that was a play, I think, that really ended up kind of taking some of the wind out of the Panthers' sail. But even though they've lost to San Francisco and Green Bay, I think it's a young Panther team that is playing really well, but they have to be able to stop the run.
Yep.
Jones just ran right through them yesterday. If they can shore up that run defense, I think they're a much better team.
Yeah, Jones and even Jamal Williams was having a big day on the ground for Green Bay against them. They ran for 6 yards per carry, 163 yards.
That's
against Carolina. I don't want to argue with the math. I don't want to argue with the analytics because math is right so often. But this was a 24-10 game. Carolina scores a touchdown, then they go for two to try to cut it to 6 rather than kick the extra point and cut it to 7.
I didn't get it.
Yeah, that's
well,
the thing, man.
It's an analytics.
It's
a slight edge in terms of probability, but I'm.
It's not
it
enough
is.
For me in that
but,
spot.
Well, here's the thing. I don't know if mentally it's worth the risk, because
absolutely.
If you don't make it, then you're creating more of a sense of not panic, but something close to that on the team that's behind.
Well, I read recently, and we were talking about it here at Red Rock, that a lot of times when a team does go for two earlier than you would think they should, it's because that drive has been so successful and they've seen something, and the
sure.
way the scheme is going at that point, the analytics do point to an increased probability.
Right.
But I just think in those conditions, an opportunity to get
yes.
within 7, and then if you wanted to go for two to win it maybe
sure.
at the end of the game if you scored again.
I'd rather do that.
Different story. I just thought it was – I know he's, Riverboat Ron. I just thought it was a little bit of a strange call, just under the conditions and the way they had kind of come back to go for two at that spot.
No, Matt Stafford, his consecutive game streak is over. The Lions had to go with Driscoll. It showed that there was a difference. Trubisky actually had a pretty good game for the Bears, particularly by his standards. Anyway, Chicago moves to 4-5 with a 20-13 victory over the Lions. Chuck, I didn't get the impression that either one of these teams – is going to be much down the stretch. I think they both got too many flaws.
Yeah, I mean, the Lions now have lost 3 or 4 straight games, and if Stafford's out, you can pretty much erase them. You know, Trubisky has had some of his best games over the last 2 years against the Lions.
Yeah.
They still don't move the chains enough, the Bears, and they let teams hang around. For me, I'm really getting more concerned, though, with their defense. You look at Khalil Mack, he hasn't had a sack since week five. They don't seem to be putting as much pressure on the quarterback. They just look a little bit out of sorts, and maybe losing Vic Fangio is a much bigger loss than what we all thought. I thought bringing Pagano in with that young defense, there wouldn't be that big drop-off, but I just don't see the same defense out there. They seemed good early in the year when they beat Minnesota, and they were really dominant at home, but Driscoll didn't have a bad game yesterday, and if that's Matt Stafford, I have to believe that the other side actually wins that game in the Detroit Lions.
I'll go along with that. Dolphins, 2-0 the last 2 weeks, and this was a big one because they beat the Colts, and that's a very damaging 16-12 loss for Indianapolis, Chuck.
It really is. I mean, you look at, I think, but Vinatieri missing that extra point put him in a position where they couldn't kick a field goal late to tie. He's really cost them about three games this year, even going back to week one against the Chargers when he missed an extra point and field goal. Miami's won two. Their win total was, I think, 1.5. You know, they're not there at the number one pick anymore, but they've got plenty of assets and plenty of cash, and they're actually playing really well. I mean, they were in a couple of those games. Don't forget on that Thursday night game, guys, they led the Steelers by two touchdowns before they lost that game.
Listen,
so they have been playing better of late.
Ryan Fitzpatrick's not going to the Hall of Fame, but I'm going to tell you one thing. There's no team's going to lay down when Ryan Fitzpatrick's in the field.
Yeah. Energy, leadership, he brings it, no doubt about it. So he's obviously going to have this team focused. Listen, obviously the Dolphins and the Jets were so scared off by Chase Young's off-field indiscretions that they both decided to go out and win a football game. Listen, as far as this is concerned, I you mentioned Vinatieri. You know what the worst play of the game was for the Colts besides the missed field goal, the missed extra point, whatever it was? Ebron sets up at the 7-yard line on 4th and 10 at the 16, catches the ball. The ball is delivered right to him, and he's tackled a yard short of the first down. Game over. He gets the first down there. They might score a touchdown.
You've got to get to the sticks.
You've got to get beyond the sticks. Absolutely.
Rams and Steelers. Steelers are 5-4. This is a great job by Mike Tomlin with a patchwork team right now. And on the Rams, their offensive line at this point sucks. Okay, it's just terrible. And Goff has gone backwards. And the Rams, they don't look like a playoff team at this point. And by the way, I think this team's lost confidence in Gurley.
Not only do they not look like a playoff team, they're not a playoff team at this point if the season ended today. You're right. Gurley just doesn't seem like the same back.
Nope.
Their offensive line is bad. Goff is just making, I think, bad decisions. They gave him that big deal. Cooper Kupp had no receptions yesterday. I know they don't have Cooks in the lineup, but that offense just looks out of sorts. And, you know, everybody called McVay that offensive genius. But that offense, I think, what, 17 straight drives now without a touchdown. They are really struggling, and you know it's a big game on Sunday night. It's Bears Rams. One team's 5-4, one team's 4-5. But it's a big game Sunday night. The Bears smacked them in the mouth last year on prime time with their defense. See if they can do it again, because if you put pressure on Jared Goff, he just does not look like the same quarterback.
Well, McVay doesn't have his offensive coordinator from last year. He's doing a great job in Cincy right now as a head coach. But listen, you go back to the Super Bowl. The New England Patriots showed everybody else, laid the blueprint. Here's what you do to stop the Rams. You take away the run, which takes away the play action, which is what their offense is all predicated about. And here's the problem. He's not a downfield passer. He's got to have a good running game around him.
No.
He's got to play action. If it's not there, he's not a drop back guy. So they're 5-5, including the Super Bowl, the last 10 games. He's 60%. That's it this season. How about this? Since the loss to the Patriots, Goff has 11 touchdowns and 10 interceptions in 10 games.
And
that's worse than Trubisky, isn't it?
And the thing is, he's not throwing high-risk passes.
He's not.
If you look at most of those touchdowns, I would say half of those touchdowns were created by Cooper Kupp and some of their young wideouts who actually made a short play, a 30, 40, 50-yard touchdown or more. It's not him hitting guys in stride deep. You're absolutely right. I think it's a lot more yak than anything else, and that offense has really regressed so far this season.
And a terrific Sunday night game between the Vikings and Cowboys, and Kirk Cousins picks up a win against the winning team and in a big game setting. Vikings 28, Cowboys 24. Cook outplayed Elliott.
Right.
And without Thielen, the Vikings found ways to get the ball to their weapons. The Cowboys, if not for Amari Cooper and his amazing heroics on the sidelines, this isn't that close a game.
You know, I'm not I'm not overly convinced that Cousins had a great game last night. It was really about Cook being able to run. They could not stop the run. They had that drive late in the fourth quarter. I think they had 8 or 9 plays, and 7 or 8 of those plays were all running plays. They knew what was coming and still couldn't stop it. He didn't really look downfield that much. He hit Rudolph underneath with a few passes. Diggs had a so-so game, but they screened the Cowboys to death. When they weren't running the ball, the Cowboys did not adjust at halftime. They have an over-aggressive pass rush and very active linebackers. I thought Minnesota schemed really well for that. Cowboys, again, made no adjustments at halftime. They screened them to death. And I still wonder about the play calling. I mean, they kicked the field goal to make it 28-24. But when you had that drive late and you had an opportunity to take the lead or tie that game, when they ran on both second and third down, the way that the Vikings had committed to stop Elliott, I thought it was really bad play calling by the Cowboys because Prescott had been going right through them through the air. And as you mentioned, Cooper was having a great game.
Tremendous.
So was Cobb. So was Gallup. They still have Witten. I was really surprised the play calling by the Cowboys late in that game. I think it cost them.
And we'll move to what is an attractive Monday night matchup. I think you might get some points scored tonight. Seahawks and 49ers with the MVP of the league so far in Russell Wilson. And the team that's played the best football in the league in the 49ers.
It's a great matchup. The Seahawks have actually beat them 9 out of the last 10 times they've played. Niners only undefeated team. It's their defense against Richard Sherman, against the Seahawks and Russell Wilson. It's kind of one of those games, guys, that's ping-pong back and forth. But I can tell you we've had some good money line action on the Seahawks. I guess if you like the Seahawks tonight, you think they can win the game outright. Should be a fun game tonight to watch. Kittle and both Robbie Gould, both really doubtful tonight, which I think could hurt San Francisco.
No question about it. What's the total on the game? Chuck, what's the over and under?
You know, I'm not exactly sure where we're at, the exact number we're at right now, guys. I'm in the back office, but, you know, you've seen some over money. I think it's right around 42.5 or so. So you've started to see some over money come in.
You know, I was going to say real quickly about this that, you know, Russell Wilson has been a dog of 6 or more 5 times in his career. He's never failed to cover the spread. Yeah. We know how good Pete Carroll is as the Seattle coach in primetime games. There, I think you hit it on the head, Chuck, when you talked about the tight end with Kittle possibly hurting this team.
Big.
This is like the 4th or 5th worst DVOA, talking about the Seattle defense and DVOA, which is one of my favorite statistics that Football Outsider really started promoting and coming up with a couple of years ago. And my whole thought on this last Sunday when handicapping this game for this week was, you know, if Seattle can stuff Kittle, stuff the tight end, Jimmy G has to do something he hasn't had to do all season, win a game throwing the ball downfield. So we're going to see tonight, potentially, if he's able to actually make those plays with his arm. He hasn't been the most accurate quarterback. It's been running game, use the tight end, little short passes here and there. I think, you know, with that Seattle coaching staff, they've got a chance to upset the Niners tonight.
And one thing we know is that if you might want to get into action while the game's going on, it's an easy way to do that with STN.
STN Mobile, yep, come on in, guys. We'll get you signed up in a matter of minutes. It really does bring the sports book to the palm of your hand. And really quick, though, for Russell Wilson, he hasn't gone up against a defense like this.
Yeah, sure.
And to me, the jury's still out on Seattle a little bit. They lost at home to the Ravens, lost at home to the Saints, should have lost to the Rams, trailed the Bengals, trailed the Bucks. They're beating some of the teams that they have to, but this is a really good defense. Russell Wilson's had a lot of success this year running around. I don't think he's going to be able to run around like he's done against Bosa and company tonight. So it's really it's Wilson against that defense, and Jimmy G, can he muster anything without Kittle in the lineup?
And Chuck, let everybody know what's happening at Sunset Station. I know we're closing in on the next Vegas Golden Knights viewing party.
Yeah, our next Vegas Golden Knights viewing party is Thanksgiving Eve, guys, November 27th. It's free, open to the public. We'll be giving away a lot of cool swag. Don't forget about our Sunday viewing parties in Club Madrid. We give away jerseys, a lot of other stuff. They're always free, open to the public. They're just a lot of fun. So if you haven't experienced them, come on over, and maybe you'll win something, some cool prizes.
Thanks, Chuck. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Chuck Esposito, Sunset Station, Station Casino. Scott Sprites is here with me, Dave Coca. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll tell you what's happening at Doc Sports. We'll get you an angle of the day, and we'll look at tonight's NBA.
The Las Vegas Sports Line.
Football Central at the Westgate Las Vegas Resort and Casino is the place to catch all the action. Hey, it's Adam Hill from Cofield & Company on ESPN Las Vegas. Join us this Sunday morning starting at 8 as we go over all the lines with Sportsbook Director Jay Cornegay. Then stick around to watch all the games on huge HD screens in the Superbook. Buckets of beer specials, Nathan's foot-long hot dogs, and your chance to win all kinds of great prizes. Always free parking. Football Central at the Westgate Las Vegas Resort & Casino with ESPN Las Vegas.
One of the best matchups of the 2019 NFL season comes your way for Monday Night Football. After years of misery, the 49ers are riding high. Will Russell Wilson and the Seahawks play spoiler and take them down a notch in the NFC West? Or will Jimmy Garoppolo show that this year's Niners team is the real deal? Listen today as Cofield and Company lead you up to kickoff at 5 on your home of the NFL. ESPN Las Vegas, 1100 AM and 100.9 FM.
Dave Kokin with John Lyons from Lyons Physical Therapy. So what are the most common injuries you see in your practice?
The primary injuries that we see are general neck and back pain. That's 100% the most frequent injuries we'll see. That can be anything from wear and tear, age-related injuries. We see a lot of work-related injuries where patients lift, bend, or twist the wrong way. These are also associated with car accidents. I would say secondarily, shoulder and knee injuries, anything sports related or just everyday activities. Those would be the four main injuries that we see.
LyonsPTLV.com, 702-476-0222.
Don't just listen to the game. Come join the party. Catch the Vegas Golden Knights viewing parties at all station casinos, fiestas, and pubs. Beer specials starting at just $3. $5 shots featuring Jägermeister, Jack Daniels, and Patron Tequila available during every Vegas Golden Knights game in the sports books at station casinos and fiestas and tonic bar at pubs. The best way to say go Knights go is at station casinos, fiestas, and pubs. Vegas born.
Hello, friends. This is Thomas Johnson from Joe's Seafood Prime Steak and Stone Crab. Need a great idea for lunch or dinner? Your best bet is Joe's, one of the most popular dining destinations on the Strip. Joe's provides the ideal setting for private parties with accommodations for up to 150 guests. Stop by to see us at the Forum Shops at Caesars and ask for Thomas Johnson, your maitre d'.
Here's a 29-13 angle from Ralph Michaels. This is on road teams versus division opponents in the game before a bye. The Seattle Seahawks are on the road against the division opponent, and they have their bye week coming up. So they would be the 29-13 side in that trend. Don't forget to make your reservations at Joe's if you're going in the evening, 702-792-9222. And you can follow Joe's on Twitter at Joe's Vegas. Scott Sprites is here. I'm Dave Kokin. Scott, what's happening at Ducks?
Well, I'll tell you what, free pick videos every single night of the week. I think I've not done three videos in 18 months. That's about how long. I mean, it's like almost every day of the year, except for the All-Star break. But I put those out, mine, by 2 a.m. Pacific time every single day of the week. Sometimes it's a headache. But we've been doing really well on these free pick videos. I mean, we've just been tearing it up. And again, tonight, I do have the Monday Night Football game on there, but I already told you I like Seattle. But check those out. Also, there's got to be six guys over there who do free pick videos each and every day of the week. There's a $60 sign-up free account for those who are not members at DocSports.com. You get more information by going over the homepage, DocSports.com.
Not bad. $60 for free is always a good thing. NBA tonight, Cavs and Celtics is one of
Mavs
the
and Celtics.
What did I? Yeah, I wrote Cavs. It's Mavs and Celtics. I guess that's the best. Well, no, it's not the best matchup of the night, but it's the second best matchup of the night.
Well, if I could get Boston minus 3.5 against the Cavaliers.
Yeah, really? Yeah.
In Beantown, I'll take it. Now, it's tough, man. Gordon Hayward, I'd be out with a broken hand. They fooled the heck out of me on Saturday.
I can't believe this. This guy is just cursed as
far as
injury.
Oh, my gosh. And this is going to be a couple of months, probably. Yeah. He's got to get surgery on the hand. They crushed San Antonio in San Antonio, 135-115. I've been having a real good run in the NBA, Dave, but I lost that one, and I was never in it with the Spurs. That one shocked me at how well Boston did at both ends of the floor. Again, defensively, overall, they're second best or something like that, third best in the league as far as field goal percentage allowed is concerned. They give up about 41%. They've won seven straight without Enes Kanter, but he is back tonight. And Jaylen Brown was terrific, kind of picking up all the slack for Gordon Hayward's absence the other night. The thing is that's kind of scary is, can Boston counter Doncic and Porzingis without Boston's full squad, specifically Hayward, as we just mentioned. And their bench scored almost 70 points the other night for Denver. So, listen, they're on an 11-1 spread run on the road, are these Dallas Mavericks. I can't go against them tonight. I didn't play Dallas here, but for me it was going to be Boston or nothing. I chose nothing, but I leaned towards Dallas.
And the game of the night in the NBA has the defending, reigning NBA champions taking on the team that a lot of people will think will take the crown away from them when it comes to the playoffs this year. The Raptors taking on the Clippers.
Yeah, no Kyle Lowry or Serge, and both are banged up. But it, you know, I guess the king of load management is going to play tonight for the Clippers, talking about Kawhi. But the Clips, you know, they aren't exactly crushing teams. They're not blowing teams out. Toronto's been balanced this year. They just beat the Lakers. But listen, because Lowry is missing, we've got a situation where I think it's really heavily baked into the number. I think that number's too tall for a Clippers team that's not wiping teams out. I think it's going to be a little bit closer than that tonight.
Minnesota and Iowa, one of the three, there's some big games this weekend, but I chose three that we can just kind of talk about for a moment. I don't think either one of us have made a decision yet as to where we might be going with these games. But Minnesota, a lot of people will talk about them being in a letdown spot this week as they travel to Iowa. I'm not going to buy that. I mean, if I play Iowa here, it's because I think Iowa's going to beat them. I don't think P.J. Fleck is going to let this team go flat.
Yeah, I don't think you could blindly play potential letdown spots. If you did, you lost with Illinois after they beat Wisconsin. You lost with Illinois a couple of times. You lost with Kansas State after they beat Oklahoma and then came out and crushed their in-state rival. So you can't count on that being a blind bet, that's for sure. But listen, if there is room for a letdown, I mean, P.J. Fleck was body surfing on the crowd after the game the other night. I mean, they cut loose like they just won the conference championship. The thing about the Hawkeyes that makes them so scary to go against in this spot, they play grinded-out football. Most of the games are going to be pretty close. They rely on defense. They're not high flash type of team, and that's why they're always 8-4 under Ferentz. They're always a good team. They're not a great team, but they don't make a lot of mistakes that cost them. I have not decided, like you, on this game yet, but boy, it does feel like if there's going to be a letdown spot, this would be it.
Yeah, and the public will be on Minnesota here because they are the underdog in the game. Georgia has found its game. They weren't playing at the level most people expected them to be at, and I think their full potential the first half of the season. Now they are. The Bulldogs are hot, but they've got a tough test this weekend in this Auburn team, which is, you know, they're going to end up with three or four losses, but they're a really good team.
Listen, Auburn can't pass, but
it's
all one-dimensional, but they do it well. The defense plays well. Outside of the win over hapless Arkansas, though, over the last 4 weeks, that Auburn team has scored 13, 20, and 20 points. A little bit scary there, but it's tough.
Nix just isn't getting the job.
He's not accurate enough.
And Gatewood's not there anymore.
Exactly. Georgia, 89 points scored in their last four games. That's only 22 points per game. They can run with the best of them, but passing game's mediocre. And Jake Fromm averages just 17 completions per game. It looks like an under, but 43.5 is awfully low. And here's the thing that always scares me. I heard people talking about LSU-Bama under. Stayed away from it myself. When you've got ultra top-notch athletes on defense that are quick as lightning, you sometimes get a game that goes over because the defense is making great plays and turning games around with, you know, picks, fumbles, returns, things of that nature. But again, here it's right now too tough for me to call at 2.5-3 on Georgia. I just think you're going to see a stout defensive game. Listen, Auburn was even able to hold LSU to 23 points.
Yeah.
I know they gave up a ton of yardage, but they only gave up 23 points.
No, they're really solid. In the trenches, I'd put Auburn there with anybody. It's just too bad they're not really strong at quarterback this year. You know, going into this weekend, one of the things that was, I think, a consensus was not necessarily that Oklahoma was going to have an easy time with Iowa State, but that if they got ahead by a margin, they might really look to add on and make a bit of a statement to the selection committee. Well, that kind of went up in smoke, and they almost lost the football game after having the big lead against Iowa State. So it was not an impressive win for Oklahoma, 1-point victory over Iowa State. It was not an impressive win for Baylor either, but they won, and they're still unbeaten, and now they're at home. And a win here by Baylor, and things get really interesting because they're not one of the four best teams in the country. But they're still going to be unbeaten if they get through this game, and with a really good chance to stay unbeaten.
Yeah, Cyclones miss a two-point conversion, or they potentially win that football game. The defense for Oklahoma is not of championship caliber. It's just not. They've given up 89 points in the last two games. They had a week off to prepare for Iowa State and still didn't get it done. Brock Purdy lit them up. Listen to this. Sooners have not picked off a pass, not a single pass, no interceptions since September 14th against UCLA. They have faced 185 passes in their last six games. They've given up 10 touchdown passes, no interceptions for Oklahoma's defense. And you mentioned it, Baylor's talent level is not 8-0 or 9-0 or whatever they happen to be, but Matt Rhule is incredible. I mean, I love this guy. I love him. He coaches this team up. Yep. They don't make a ton of mistakes. I'm not sure that Lincoln Riley is a better coach than Matt Rhule here, Dave. I mean, Lincoln Riley inherits just busloads of talent. Matt Rhule has to take over a program that was about to teeter off the cliff, and he's got him undefeated this late in the season.
And I can almost guarantee you that everybody in this selection committee for the playoffs is just kind of clasping their hands and saying, please, somebody beat Baylor.
Exactly.
Because they're going to have a real problem. If Baylor stays unbeaten and wins the Big 12 championship,
right,
you got to put them in the playoffs. And I don't know of anybody who thinks they're a top four team. So I can guarantee you the powers that be in the NCAA would love for this team to lose a game. Might happen this week. They're going to be dogs at home. But I can tell you I won't be on the other side.
Oh, I won't. It's one of those things where I got to take the dog or I got to pass the game. So it's leaning towards passing the game. But again, I just look at what Rhule does each and every week. He's got his team in there. I don't even know if they're a top 10 team, to tell you the truth, as far as the talent that's at Baylor
right now.
No, I
don't think they are.
It's just a well-coached team.
I don't think there's a top, honestly, in terms of overall talent, I'm not sure there's a top 10 team in the Big 12.
You're
Oklahoma's probably the best team, and I don't know that they're a top 10
team. I think they're top 10 because I think the offensive talent is
there. Offense is great, but the defense is
stinks. The secondary is ridiculous. Yeah. How could you go all those games and 185 passes and not have a pick since September 14th?
Look, I mean, what have they done in their last couple of games, by the way?
Disaster.
I'm not
Brock Purdy lit them up.
Kansas State's a nice team, but they're not great.
Right.
And they were lucky that, Iowa State makes a two-point conversion and the season's over for Oklahoma.
Sure.
Anyway, take a break. We'll come back. Marquee matchup next.
The Las Vegas Sports Line.
Don't just listen to the game. Come join the party. Catch the Vegas Golden Knights viewing parties at all station casinos, fiestas, and pubs. Beer specials starting at just $3. $5 shots featuring Jägermeister, Jack Daniels, and Patron Tequila. Available during every Vegas Golden Knights game. In the sports books at station casinos and fiestas. And tonic bar at pubs. The best way to say go Knights go is at station casinos, fiestas, and pubs. Vegas born.
Hey, Dave Kokin with John Lyons from Lyons Physical Therapy. John, what type of injuries do you treat at LPT?
Dave, we treat a whole gamut of injuries, primarily orthopedic injuries, anything from neck pain, back pain, post-surgical rehabilitation. We also specialize in treating victims after any car accidents or slip and fall type injuries.
LyonsPTLV.com, 702-476-0222.
Football Central at the Westgate Las Vegas Resort and Casino is the place to catch all the action. Hey, it's Adam Hill from Cofield & Company on ESPN Las Vegas. Join us this Sunday morning starting at 8 as we go over all the lines with Sportsbook Director Jay Cornegay. Then stick around to watch all the games on huge HD screens in the Superbook. Buckets of beer specials, Nathan's footlong hot dogs, and your chance to win all kinds of great prizes. Always free parking. Football Central at the Westgate Las Vegas Resort and Casino with ESPN Las Vegas.
With a bowl game out of consideration, can the UNLV football team finish the season strong? They'll face a tough test this week as the Rainbow Warriors of Hawaii make the trip to Las Vegas for a Mountain West showdown. Can the Rebels get their first conference win of the season? Or will the Rainbow Warriors leave the mainland with a win? Listen Saturday with our pregame starting at 11:30 with kickoff at 12:30 here on ESPN Las Vegas, 1100 AM and 100.9 FM.
What's hot today? It's time for the Wager Talk Marquee Matchup of the Night with Marco D'Angelo. WagerTalk.com. Start winning now.
Grandpa Marco, how are you, big guy?
I
disconnected.
I don't think he. I don't think he heard you there. There you go.
Hi, Grandpa. What's going on?
That's not going to get old, is it?
You know, the scary thing is. By the way, Marco, it's good to be on air with you. It's been a while, buddy. This is Scott.
Hey, Scott.
Listen, I want to say congratulations, and I just got to say that you know we were calling you Gramps over at Wager Talk long before you had a grandchild.
You know what? I've seen recent pictures of you and your daughter at the hockey games, and you're not getting any younger.
Hey,
none of us are. All right, but you know what? The new granddaughter will keep you young, and that's a fact. Let's talk about the marquee matchup, and I'm going to take a stab and say you're going with the Seahawks 49ers game.
Oh, they're playing tonight?
Yes.
Yeah, I guess we should talk about that one, huh? Yeah, that's a marquee matchup. And, you know, we've had some stink bombs on Thursday nights and a couple Monday night games, but this is definitely not one of them. You've got the two heavyweights going at it, the new kid on the block being the San Francisco 49ers, undefeated. And, guys, they're putting up, you know, some historic numbers of what they're doing this season. Throw out the Thursday game last week against Arizona. Let's be honest. The short week, you go to Arizona with this game on deck. That was a horrible spot. You know I'm a situational guy. Arizona was screaming for it to be a live dog play there, and they did, and they almost got San Francisco 28-25, but the 49ers found a way, playing not their best game of the season and yet winning. And that's a sign of a good team when you can not play your best and still escape with the win. And now they head here to Monday. And we've seen them in a couple other statement situations this year. Let's talk most notably the Monday night game against the Cleveland Browns. What a beatdown they put on the Browns. Their defense was absolutely smothering in that game. And then the following week when they had the showdown with the Rams, everybody thought off the Monday night game they might have a letdown. They didn't. They beat down the Rams, and Goff and company couldn't get anything going. Now you got Seattle coming in here, and I know when I used to do a lot of radio spots with Scott, he had a little bit of a man crush on Russell Wilson, and I'm sure the way Russell's playing this year, Scott still has that man crush, and he's going to be a handful to contain in this game. But no team's thrown for 300 yards against the 49ers this season. In fact, only one team has thrown for more than 200. I am going to look at the 49ers to shut down Russell Wilson and get the win tonight. I've got them winning by 10. Always dangerous laying points to Russell Wilson. I will point out that over the last 5 years, when Russell Wilson's been a road underdog, he's 13-7 against the spread, guys. But Jimmy G, on the flip side, 20-3 straight up the last three seasons when he starts at quarterback, and the 49ers 15-8 whenever he starts a game. Let's go ahead and call it the 49ers tonight. I got them winning by 10.
And $9 Monday at Wager Talk.
It is $9 Monday. I have a play on tonight's Monday night game. It's on the total, but I do have a second play up, Dave. Rare for me. It's a Thursday night 5% play. I love the Thursday night matchup, and it happens to be Pittsburgh and Cleveland.
Ah.
And, Dave, you know me over the years. I'm not a homer. I know when to go with Pittsburgh and when to go against them, and I'll go against them as quickly as I'll go with them because, you know, I like to have a good steak dinner, and Pittsburgh's never bought me a steak dinner, so I have no affiliation to owe them anything. So find out which side I'm going with on Thursday, and check out everybody at Wager Talk and Sports Memo today, $9 Monday.
Have fun doing the videos this week, buddy.
All right. Thanks, guys. Good talking to you, Scott.
Yeah, congrats, Marco. Take care, man.
All right.
Marco D'Angelo, follow him on Twitter at Marco in Vegas. You can follow Scott Spritzer at Scott Wins. You can follow me at Dave Koken. And Chuck Esposito doesn't have a Twitter account, so I can't tell you what to follow him on, but you can follow Sunset Station on Twitter. It is time for us to... We'll get to it in this portion of the show. Let's go to the Lions Physical Therapy Play of the Day.
It's the LPT Play of the Day. Tonight's best bet from Lions Physical Therapy. Your five-star rated specialists.
And I'm not going to give away this angle. I'm one of those that, I think two reasons. One, it's a jinx. And secondly, that's what people pay me for, is to do this research or to talk with somebody else who's doing research. But we have found something. And it has to do with opening numbers. And I'm not going to tell you anything more than that. but it has to do with opening numbers and where the number goes in college football, and it's really strong. And if you guys can figure it out for yourself, that's great. But Scott, this is part of what we do. And when you find something that wins, my philosophy is kind of keep it to yourself.
Absolutely. I mean, that's my whole thought, is you keep it to yourself until somebody finds out about it. They post it on Twitter to play hero, and then it stops working.
You know, it's interesting.
You want me to mention? I mean, what are you? I'm sorry. Were you getting to a game there? Or
no,
did you,
okay, no. Right. I don't even know what I'm going to use for a game.
Okay.
I'll toss that to you in a second.
Okay.
But it's funny, and I'm not. It's not really true, but it is. We have a friend of ours in the business, and I could tell from his opening night college basketball plays exactly what he was doing. And he was playing an angle that has worked very nicely for several years.
For a decade.
Yeah. And he started playing it, and it's going kaput this year.
I had to quit using it because of that. And I was, and it's funny because we commented to each other about,
yeah,
he's got wind of it. We're in trouble here. And it's an early season college basketball angle. What a bummer.
And he's a good handicapper. But
yeah, he's a smart guy. He knows what he's doing.
When I saw it, it's like, oh, boy, this is – that means it's out there. And once something's out there, I found over the years, once an angle or a trend becomes public, it just doesn't seem to work anymore. So we're not going to tell you about this angle that we're looking at in college football, but I'm already peeking at some things and seeing some possible plays this week. Scott, I will leave it up to you, because I don't have a single play tonight. I'll let you fire away with the Lions physical therapy play of the day.
Sounds good. Let's see if we can get us a winner here. We're going to lay the spot with the Spurs.
Ah,
off
okay.
That huge, humiliating game at home the other night against the Boston Celtics, in which they gave up 38, 39 points in the first quarter, and it was never closer than that. They lost by 20. Memphis has been getting shellacked night after night. I know that feels like, well, let's grab the big points here with Memphis, but I think San Antonio comes out and says, we're hungry, we're embarrassed, we're going to have a good game.
That's I've always liked that philosophy. The funny thing is, it's not working in the NHL right now. But I like the philosophy of good teams off embarrassing losses.
And you got to lay a lot of points, but I think that's, to me, it's not a big play, but it's the best game on the NBA board.
Hopefully it works out really well. Thanks to Chuck Esposito from Sunset Station and Station Casinos. Always great to catch up with Chuck. Tomorrow, another one of the top odds makers in town, Jeff Sherman from Superbook USA, will join us. We'll have some outstanding hockey analysis in tomorrow's show as well from NHLtips.ca. Scott Spreitzer, Marco D'Angelo, great job. Ari Platinum sitting in as our producer today. Very nicely done. I'm Dave Koken. We hope you enjoyed the show. Have a great Monday night. Make it better by heading over to Pizza Rock at Green Valley Ranch Station for Cofield and Company. That's next on The Sports Leader.